the latest from the world of sports. With the Super Bowl in the rearview mirror and the Winter Olympics on the horizon, the world of sports is in the spotlight. Which event are you most looking forward to? The figure skating matchup of Japanese world champion Yuzuru Hanzu, often called the best skater ever, with American teen phenom Nathan Chen and his five quad jumps? Are you excited to cheer on the athletes with main ties in the biathlon and mogul skiing? Or are you still talking about the Super Bowl? What was the real reason Malcolm Butler was sidelined? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk about those stories and more with two sports journalists, Glenn Jordan from the Portland Press Herald and Karen Given from NPR's Only a Game. From the horrific Larry Nassar sentencing and its bigger implications to pickleball, we're talking sports. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It has been quite a week in the world of sports, from the heart-wrenching testimony by hundreds of gymnasts abused by Larry Nassar to the Super Bowl, an exciting game, even though the Eagles won. Now we have the upcoming Winter Olympics, March Madness, and a whole lot of other sports news. Today, we are going to discuss sports on Maine Calling. With me in the studio, Glenn Jordan, who is a sports writer for the Portland Press Herald, and I've been told a world-class pickleball player. On the line with us from the studios of WBUR, Karen Given. She's a senior producer of NPR's Only a Game. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you excited about the Winter Olympics? Did any of the commercials at the Super Bowl stand out to you? What are you following in the world of sports? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And welcome to both of you. And I think I should start with the Patriots because there are a couple big headlines just today. I'll start with this one. It was widely expected that after the Super Bowl, the Patriots were going to lose two important members of their coaching staff. And indeed, it has been announced that defensive coordinator Matt Patricia will become the head coach of the Lions. But this morning, the Indianapolis Colts announced that the Patriots' offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, backed out of a deal there and is going to stay in New England. Karen, what do you make of that?
I mean, this is obviously good news for Patriots fans. You don't want to lose both of those guys in the same season. That would be tough. You know, it's a really interesting thing to see what people are making of it. Every possible explanation on the books has been put out there. Everything from he doesn't want to move his family again. He moved around a whole lot earlier in his career to, you know, sort of more wild theories that Kraft just offered him so much money he couldn't possibly go because Kraft wanted to sort of thumb his nose at the Colts. And who knows? But I think it's almost undoubtedly about Bill Belichick. He will retire eventually and someone will have to take his place. And I think Josh McDaniels thinks he's the guy.
Oh, interesting. What about you, Glenn? What do you think?
Well, it's not lost on many observers that it was the Indianapolis Colts who started the whole Deflategate thing, who accused the Patriots of the underinflated footballs, and so you know, whether that factored into Mr. Kraft's decision to sweeten the pot, I don't know. But I don't know if I had the choice of bringing my family to live in Indiana or New England, I'm staying in New England.
Okay, so speaking of the Patriots, this is my only other Patriots question, unless you all want me to bring up others. Lots of questions after the Super Bowl about why cornerback Malcolm Butler was sidelined. We are starting to learn more, kind of. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, it's really fascinating to see him, because it was such a surprise to see him sort of crying right before the game in a game where a backup quarterback completely shredded your defense for 500 plus yards, to not play a guy who has proven himself on the biggest stage and made the biggest play perhaps in Patriots history was baffling. And then to have Belichick not even given it, an answer it speaks to two things, I think. One is that, you know, the franchise above all for Belichick, it's his way, and he's certainly in charge, and he's going to do things his way, and that has resulted in a remarkable run, and it's hard to argue with that. You know, this was not one of their best teams. This was there were some flaws in this team, but you look over this period that they've had, and it's been very successful, more successful than any other franchise. But then you also look at, well, is there some hubris involved? Is it this, well, I'm going to teach him a lesson at the expense of you know, costing your team a possible Super Bowl title? And I don't know the inside answers, but it seems like, geez, I would have given him a shot.
Karen, I'm sure Boston Sports Radio is going nuts. Oh. Is this all about a curfew?
You know, I don't know that anybody knows for sure what it's all about. I mean, Butler says he did not miss curfew, that he was not at clubs, that he was not doing anything that he wasn't supposed to be doing. You know, the only real answer we've gotten out of the Patriots is that it was in the best interest of the team, which is wonderfully vague. You know, I mean, it really sounds on its surface like it has to be, as Glenn says, like a disciplinary thing. Like he did something that Belichick didn't like. Belichick wanted to make some sort of statement for all future teams, for all future players, that you don't cross me. But it is just head scratching that you would be willing to give up a Super Bowl win for that, you know? This is a guy who, this is a stat I just saw. He played 97.8% of defensive snaps during the regular season. So clearly he's good at his job. And clearly the team needed him on defense. That was their real trouble in that Super Bowl. So it's really perplexing and intriguing. But like all things in sort of the Belichick era, I don't think we'll ever know. I mean, the guy just really loves being tight-lipped and not saying anything. So I think if fans are to take anything from it, you kind of have to just say, well, I know he's a smart guy. I know he makes good decisions. That's how we've gotten to where we are now. And maybe I just need to trust him that there was some reason for this. But it's hard when you have no idea what the reason was.
So unlike AM Sports Radio, we're not going to talk about this for 7 hours straight.
Consider
Butler's history, too. I mean, this is not a brash, talkative guy who's always made trouble. He's towing the company line. He appreciates what the Patriots have done.
Yeah.
I don't see how you didn't give him a chance.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the Olympics. Glenn, which athletes are you watching closely? I know you've been covering some of the athletes with Maine ties. Always exciting.
Yes. Well, there's I think we have six Maine athletes, or six athletes with Maine ties. There's biathlon is sort of the Maine sport, or the sport for Mainers anyway in the Olympics, because we have Fort Kent and Presque Isle where the World Cup has come. Claire Egan from Cape Elizabeth and Russell Currier of Stockholm went to Caribou High School. They're both 30. It's the second Olympics for Currier. It's the first for Claire Egan. Biathlon is the one winter sport in which the United States has never won a medal. It's still a long shot, but there's a chance.
I've had the pleasure of interviewing Claire Egan. She is fun.
Yeah, she's a really interesting kid. She's 30. but I think I've written half a dozen stories over the years on Claire. I first interviewed her, I think, when she was a high school senior. Actually, earlier than that too, because I cover cross country and Nordic skiing in high school, and she went to a college that didn't have a ski team, and
she started one.
That's right. So she started one at Wellesley College, and she made it to the NCAAs, and then she had a year extra of eligibility left because she spent her junior year abroad in Italy and Switzerland learning French and Italian and German, and so she had a year of eligibility left. So she went to UNH for a graduate degree in linguistics, and also ran cross country, ran track and field, and competed in Nordic skiing, and then continued with Nordic skiing. Was thinking maybe cross-country skiing, she might be able to get to the Olympics that way. But there's a lot more cross-country skiers than there are biathletes. Once she discovered biathlon, and she very nearly qualified for Sochi as a complete newcomer to the sport. So this is her chance. I think she might stick around one more year with biathlon, but I don't think she'll stick around for another four. And she's making the most of this. She's an interesting, she's got all kinds of other talents, musical talents, and she knows five languages. For the past year, she's been learning a sixth, Korean, just for this experience. She worked with a Wellesley professor this summer for 4 months online because her own home study wasn't enough, she didn't feel. And she can carry on a conversation in Korean now, and she's going to surprise a lot of people, and she's going to be just a fantastic ambassador for the United States, regardless of what she does on skis.
And she has a blog that includes lots about her pet pig as well. So, anyway, and I know that, and you've covered Russell Courier, and there are others as well. Lowell Bailey, it isn't in Maine now, but he is the world champion.
Yes, Lowell Bailey was part of the Maine Winter Sports Center. He had trained in Fort Kent. He's from near Lake Placid, basically. He spent a lot of time in Maine, and he was ready to retire before last season. You know, he got married. He has a kid. He was going to they were going to start a farm or something, and he decided to give it one more shot, but only if he could bring his family, his wife and his baby girl on the road. And it turned out having a baby, biathlon is such a pressure filled sport because it's you know, you have to kind of hit these ridiculous targets while you're exhausted and breathing hard, and having a baby on the circuit was really helpful, not for just for Lowell, but for Claire, for all the biathletes. But he wound up winning a gold medal at the World Championships.
Wow. Well, I want to ask you, Karen, who you're watching, and you're working on a piece for this weekend about an athlete, right?
Well, not me personally, but my show is. Yeah, I'm watching Sophie Caldwell this week. She's going to race somewhere in the middle of next week in the cross-country sprint. And if Caldwell sounds like a familiar name when it comes to cross-country, it's because it absolutely is. She grew up in Putney, Vermont, with her entire family of cross-country skiers. Her grandfather actually competed for the United States in the 1952 Olympics, where he says he was terribly unprepared for his sport. So he came back, became a cross-country coach, and literally wrote the first book about cross-country ski instructions that was in English. So that's her grandfather. Her uncle went to the Olympics. She's got cousins who've gone to the Olympics. Her grandfather eventually became the Olympic coach, and then her father became her coach at the Stratton Mountain School. And in Sochi, she came sixth, which, if you know how cross-country skiing works, that means that she was in last place in the final. But it was the best showing for an American woman ever in cross-country skiing. And she kind of got tangled up with another racer near the beginning of the race. So she is back, and she has a really good chance of getting a medal, and it would be the first cross-country ski medal for the U.S. since the first cross-country ski medal for the U.S. in 1976.
Mm.
So
another
that's
Vermonter,
an exciting one.
Bill Koch, right?
Exactly, who trained with her grandfather.
Wow. So before we leave the Olympics, I want to ask you about marquee events. I'm really excited about the men's figure skating with Nathan Chen and Yuzuru Hanyu. I mean, I've been watching videos. I can't even believe how amazing they both are. What about you, Glenn? Is there a marquee matchup for you in the Olympics coming up?
In figure skating?
In anything. Any sport. Are you looking forward to women's ice hockey? What is the thing that you're just...
Well, I am looking forward to...
What do you have on your calendar?
I've just got pickleball on my calendar. But the beautiful thing about the Olympics is you never know where some of these stories are going to come from or who's going to come out of nowhere. And so I don't, you know, I know they're building up certain things and I just love saying Yuzuru. I think that's a fun name to say. The U.S. women's ice hockey team will be fun to watch because there's the doctor on the bench will be from Maine. She's from Portland, Allie Howe. As far as the competition, I don't know. Biathlon is really an interesting sport to watch, and it probably won't get much airtime. I think it's going to be on, at 6 in the morning, our time. But it's fascinating because it can change on a dime. And the fact that I think 6 of the 10 U.S. biathletes all have strong Maine ties through Maine Winter Sports Center, or now it's now called Outdoor Sport Institute, is something that I'll be looking forward to.
Karen, what about you? What are you excited about?
Well, I am excited about women's ice hockey. It's always exciting. I really love that sport, and I especially love it because it's quite often the United States and Canada in the finals, and I'm really, really hoping that's the way it is this year, because another story I'm working on is about the two women, sisters, who started the ice hockey programs at Cornell and Boston College. And if it is the U.S. against Canada in the final, that will be quite a showdown because the American team has 3 players from BC and the Canadian team has 5 players from Cornell. So these two sisters are responsible for potentially the programs that brought us 8 of the players that potentially are in the finals. So I'm super excited about that. I love watching curling. I don't even know who's likely to win, but I really enjoy the sport, and I enjoy the Norwegian curling team's pants.
You gotta go watch the Norwegian men for the pants. I was on a camping trip this weekend, and I told everybody you gotta watch curling to see the pants because the pants are just phenomenal.
Okay. And if you're a Facebook person, believe it or not, there is a fan page for the Norwegian men curling team's pants. It is spectacular. It will bring a smile to your face.
Okay, well, I'm going to look that up. So these are even better than some of the golf pants we see on the PGA Tour.
Well, they are in fact made by the same company. It's called Loudmouth Sports or something, and they make these just absolutely ridiculous. But it's one thing when you see one golfer in a really crazy pair of pants. It's another thing when you see a whole team of curlers in the same pants.
Okay.
It's really spectacular.
Believe it or not, we have to take a break, and there's so much we haven't talked about yet. I'm serious. We want to talk about a special that you all did on Only a Game about amateurism and college sports. I also, of course, want to talk about the Larry Nassar sentencing. So we will take that quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you in the audience as well. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Taggart Construction in Freeport, working to create healthy homes that respect the environment since 1994. TagCon.com. And the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical.
Maine Public Radio is that spot on the radio dial where articulate, knowledgeable people debate the issues that you care about. It's where you hear fresh ideas that challenge and entertain you. It's where you can enjoy the literate sound of people who love language as much as you do. It's where you sometimes have a good laugh about life, we hope. Members of Maine Public Radio make a difference every day. Their contributions assure that we can be a constant source of accurate and balanced reporting. They give us a constant source of engaging and stimulating conversation and discussion. Today is your opportunity to become a part of this very special community of supporters. Make your gift today. It will be counted toward the Super Thursday one-day membership drive. The number to call is 1-800-866-1475.
Super Thursday is tomorrow, and any contribution you make now will count toward our Super Thursday goals. You can go online to mainpublic.org or call 1-800-866-1475. Thank you so much. On the morning of Super Thursday at 7 o'clock, Mark Vogelzang, president and CEO of Maine Public, will be at Eggs and Issues for a talk on why independent journalism matters. The Portland Region Chamber of Commerce's Eggs and Issues series takes place at the Holiday Inn by the Bay. Mark will talk about the state of public radio and television today, the strategic decision to increase deeper, in-depth reporting at Maine Public, and the role of NPR and PBS in the era of fake news. If you aren't a Portland Chamber member, you can attend and receive a special Chamber member price for the event. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Sporting News. Joining me in the studio, the Portland Press Herald's Glenn Jordan. And on the line with us is NPR's Only a Game senior producer, Karen Given. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. As I mentioned before the break, we cannot talk about sports right now without talking about the Larry Nassar sentencing. Saw athlete, predominantly former gymnasts, come forward with heartbreaking stories about how this supposedly esteemed sports doctor had molested them. And that's terrible enough, but what seems even worse is the role of the organizations, the institutions, who are ostensibly charged with protecting athletes. Michigan State University, USA Olympic Committee, USA Gymnastics. Karen, is there a deeper problem here that's true in other sports as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the list of people and institutions who have let these women and girls down is just so long. And one of our listeners recently made a very good point, which is, you know, sure, some of these people deserve to lose their jobs, but some of these people probably deserve to go to jail. The level of not protecting these women and girls is just horrible. But I do think that this is a deeper problem. We've seen it in other sports. We've seen it in USA Swimming, where first USA Swimming sort of put under the rug allegations against a number of coaches. And then when it finally came out, they ended up banning 100 coaches from their sport. I mean, you know you have a serious problem if that's what's happening. It's hit USA Taekwondo as well. And I think really what's at the root of this is how much importance we put on sports. And I know as a sports reporter, that's a really weird thing to bring up. And I know it's important to put it. It's impossible to put that genie back in the bottle. But here's the one thing, the one thing I can't get out of my head from all of the women who were speaking in court and giving their testimony. They're one of the women, Ariana Castillo, she started seeing Larry Nassar when she was 8 years old after one of her coaches at the local gym broke her hip by stretching her too hard. And I think that if you are breaking 8-year-olds' hips by stretching them too hard, maybe you have placed a misplaced priority on what 8-year-olds should be doing. And maybe you should rethink, you know, how much importance you're really putting on this thing, which is important and is great. And I'm sure the 8-year-old girl loved doing gymnastics. But maybe as a parent, that's when you start saying, maybe this isn't a good idea.
And I'm wondering, and Glenn, one thing I've been thinking about a lot as I've watched this is not only the connection with what happened with USA Gymnastics and USA Swimming, but the concussions in the NFL, the doping and cycling. Are athletes just pawns?
In many sports, yeah, and NCAA football and basketball, you see too. It's just like free labor, you know. It's coaches and administrators and committee poobahs making all this money off these athletes and
protecting the institution coming
right.
before
oh,
protecting
absolutely.
The athlete.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a danger in really in anything where trying to protect the institution and when there's not a system of checks and balances, when there's not a vigorous free press in government or anything like that, whenever there's an autocratic type of governing body that doesn't brook any sort of dissent, doesn't have avenues for people without as much power to voice and have their grievances aired, then there's problems there.
I heard an interview, and I believe it may have been on your show, Karen, with Dominique Moceanu, saying that she believes gymnasts need to unionize.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't on my show, but I find that incredibly interesting because yeah, the you know, NBC makes a lot of money off the Olympics. The IOC makes a lot of money off the Olympics. There is huge money to be made off the Olympics. And it's not the athletes who see it. You know, Olympic athletes are lucky if they retire from their sport and can afford not to move back into their parents' basement, frankly. So when you're putting that kind of pressure on something and asking people to put their bodies on the line in that way, it does, I think, speak to a larger misplacement of priorities. And that misplacement of priorities, I fear, helps criminals get away with criminal activity.
Well, you know, Glenn mentioned the NCAA, and I mentioned before the break, Karen, the hour-long special that Only a Game did. We've pulled a few clips from that, and I'd like you to set up the first one. Who are we about to hear from, and tell us about
it. Yeah. Well, so this is Kevin Blackistone, and he is with the Washington Post, and he's talking about something that a lot of people who have followed this closely talk about, and that's the fact that the very, very top players in men's college basketball and football, they bring in an extraordinary amount of money, $10 billion a year. And for that, they do get a free ride to college, but not really much time to spend studying. And so Kevin is sort of placing that in a larger context for us.
You have workers who work the crops that bring in all the revenue to the overseers. It may be a strong commentary, but I think it's an apt comparison.
And Kevin's not actually the first person to say this by any means. And part of what he's getting out there and part of what you have to understand is something that you probably know just from turning on your TV. You know that most of the athletes, more than half of the athletes at this level, are Black. And that does bring an extra oomph to the conversation. It does bring more things to the conversation. But actually, the first person I'm aware of to have said, to have made the comparison to a plantation system was actually at one point the guy who started the modern NCAA. And when he retired, he looked back and said, "What have I done?"
Mm. And you have one more clip from that special. Tell us about
Absolutely,
this
Absolutely, yeah. So this is Nigel Hayes. He played basketball at Wisconsin. And if his name is familiar to you, it might be because in 2016, during March Madness, he held up a sign that said, "Broke college athlete, anything helps."
It's even funnier when you get to NCAA tournament. The guys always try to emphasize it. Hey, do you have any questions for the student athletes? And then it's like, dude, stop. You know we're not student athletes. Like, how am I a student athlete and I've been gone since Tuesday? I don't play till Friday. And I just left school for a week, but I'm a student athlete. That makes sense.
So Nigel is an interesting guy to be sure, but he makes a good point in that if you are really playing sports at the kind of level that he's playing sports at, you're not really allowed to pick your major. You're not really allowed to say, "I want a career in X when I'm done playing basketball and I want to study for that." The school pushes you towards the easiest major so that you can spend the maximum amount of time playing basketball or football.
Glenn, this has been a discussion going on in athletics and college athletics for a while now.
Yeah.
Do we need to pay these athletes?
Yeah, I mean, and you think of how many athletes are injured, you know, have lifelong debilitating injuries because of what they went through in college, and they're just cast aside, and that plantation owner metaphor I think is very apt. I think things are turning a little bit. The Ed O'Bannon case. This was a UCLA basketball player who successfully sued when was the, I think that was decided in 2016, and I think he played in the 70s or something, maybe the 80s. But it was he won his case basically against the NCAA for using his likeness in a video game or something without his permission, without any sort of remuneration. So I think the tide is turning, but it's such a huge entity, the NCAA, that it's harder. But really, yeah, it's such an exploitive situation that, you know, it's fun to watch these games. And
it's such the dream of so many young athletes to participate.
Right. Sure, sure.
Right.
It's really interesting, though, the idea that this tide is turning, because it's turning, but only in certain ways. So most fans still believe that players should not be paid, that amateurism is important, that they should be honored to be there, that the whole system might break down if you paid the players, which the math can look that way, but if you look at the math another way, it doesn't look that way at all. So what's interesting is that fans still think absolutely amateurism is the way to go. But when we did this hour-long special, I was like, well, we need one person who actually understands the economics, actually understands what's really going on here, and still says, like, players shouldn't be paid. And it was so hard to find the person who would say that. Athletic directors wouldn't say that to us. Most journalists say, no, we've got to change the system somehow. And I found, literally, I found one journalist, a former basketball player, who was like, I wasn't exploited. I was the one doing the exploiting. So it's interesting how public opinion differs so much from journalistic opinion right now.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about sports. What do you care about in the sports world right now? Glenn, I know what you care about is pickleball. So first of all, why don't you tell us what pickleball is? It's played often on tennis courts, right?
Well, you can put two pickleball courts on one tennis court. Pickleball is a ridiculously silly sounding game. And I only discovered it maybe 5 years ago. I think my mom had talked about it before, and it just sounded so silly. And I did a story on it because I heard there were retirees who were playing it, and it just is the most fun thing. It's a combination of badminton, ping pong, and tennis. And it's a sort of a smaller tennis court, and you have to serve underhand. You play with basically a wiffle ball and a paddle, a solid paddle, and you usually play doubles. It's very social, and there's lots of laughing, and but the more you play, the better you get, the much more strategy is involved, and it gets to be a really, really interesting game, and it's just taken off in Maine. There's a thriving pickleball community in Maine, all over. I think there's a woman in Bangor who has a pickleball distribution email list with like 900 people on it. And I've never even played in that area of the state. So
now I know you're probably on one side of this, but I understand there's some controversy about court time.
Oh yes, there are. The traditional tennis players don't always enjoy the raucous sounds and laughter and popping noises that the plastic ball makes against the paddles when they're sharing where they're on adjacent courts anyway. So I know in some towns they have designated different days for tennis and for pickleball. And that's the case in Fort Williams.
Well, change can be hard.
That's right. That's right. And I do have to correct. I'm an avid pickleball player. I'm not yet a world-class pickleball player. But I do hope, I aspire to
You have dreams.
I do have dreams.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we do have to take another short break. When we come back, we're going to have Karen tell us about another fun story she's working on. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Audubon, a community of people who understand that when Maine's wildlife thrives, Maine thrives. Learn more at maineaudubon.org.
One day at a time. Whether we like it or not, that's how the world seems to work. And the news develops, changes, and results in new situations one day at a time. Hi, this is Ed Moore, and host of Here and Now, with a reminder about how you and your support one day at a time makes this entire service possible. Never been a supporter before? It's easy. You set the amount and pledge once a year or every month. We'll be here asking for that support on Super Thursday, February 8th, but right now works too, at 800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org. Thanks for doing your part.
Coming up later at 2 o'clock, join us for the Commonwealth Club of California for a talk with activist Daniel Ellsberg, who in the early 70s leaked the Pentagon Papers, which outlined how the government had misled the public about the Vietnam War. He shares his new project, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. That's coming up in about 20 minutes after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, news from the world of sports. In the studio with me, Glenn Jordan from the Portland Press Herald, and on the line with us, Karen Given, a senior producer with NPR's Only a Game. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We have one more clip, and Karen, this ties right in. Yesterday's Maine Calling was about North and South Korea, and this story has something to do with North Korea, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So around this time last year, a 30-year-old from Minneapolis made a really kind of unusual decision. He decided to go to North Korea to play ice hockey. And he's really just kind of like your average ice hockey player. He calls himself a beer league player. He's not that great, but it was always his dream to play against a national team. So he went to North Korea and played against the North Korean men's national team. And when he got there, though, he discovered that there was a little bit of problem with the people that he was playing with.
In an ideal situation, I would have been the worst player on the team. But that was not the case. So we had a great range. We had one individual, I think it was his second time playing hockey ever. And I mean, talk about, you know, confidence. Not only are you willing to try a new sport, okay, but you're willing to try that new sport against a national team
in North Korea.
So what I love about Alex is that he's really thought long and hard about the implications of going to North Korea as an American, as a tourist, as a hockey player. And he went there with this really open mind and just this desire to see and learn. And I think he learned some pretty interesting things, not about North Korean politics or about the people or person who runs North Korea, but about the people who actually live there.
Oh, well, we're looking forward to that story. And I'm going to get to the calls in just a second, but I have to ask you, Glenn, about the sport of the spelling bee. Your family
yes.
has a bit of a juggernaut. And you all listening, if you remember a few years ago, fantastic video from the National Spelling Bee of a young woman from Maine at the podium and then two twin boys as the most phenomenal cheerleaders you have ever seen, the most excited cheerleaders you've ever seen. Those were Glenn's kids.
Not only do we have the Super Bowl and we have the Olympics and tomorrow, Super Thursday.
Good one.
But we have, this is spelling bee season. And the school bees are all done right now. The county bees are coming up, if not already accomplished, in Cumberland County. Next Tuesday will be the Cumberland County Spelling Bee. And I have the privilege of being the pronouncer there.
Ooh, good luck with
that. My wife, Nancy,
that.
Will be a judge. And in March will be the state spelling bee. And then, of course, Memorial Day week is the national spelling bee, the Scripps National Spelling Bee. And that's just, I don't know that there's any more exciting televised event than
what
the National Spelling Bee.
What was the name of the documentary about it? It was so wonderful. Well, we'll take a call and think about it. Nick in Scarborough, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, good afternoon. I guess it's more of a comment going back to the paying of college athletes. I'm not sure if I'm on the pay side, but I'm definitely on the side of actually give them the education that you say they're getting if they're getting a free ride to your college. You know, God forbid you have an athlete that actually wants to follow a career in the sciences or engineering. Well, he's not going to be able to do that if he's on the road a week at a time, right? Actually hold up your end of the bargain as a university and give them the education that they should have so that they have something to land on when they get out of school.
Yeah, Nick, thanks for thoughts from you all.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There have been numerous proposals and people have talked about things like, if you really can't have this huge sports juggernaut and let your players be students at the same time, why not just say to someone who has helped you bring in millions of dollars for your university by playing this sport, why not just say to them, you know, you can come back and finish your degree anytime. Anytime you want, come on back. It's free. And I think that would go, I mean, a long way to making at least me feel better when I tune in to these top flight men's college sports.
Right. Well, and maybe health insurance for life as well. You know, the other part is it's not all college programs that are like that. My son plays Division III football and you know, it's a much more low key, balanced situation at the lower levels, and even in Division I, it is out of balance. But there's so many schools and programs that are not revenue supporting. But you get places like Alabama and Florida, and where they're just raking it in, and it's all going to administrators and coaches and everything.
We've got Jenny calling in from Dover, New Hampshire, and Jenny, I think you have a similar point to make. Go ahead.
I do. My point is that we have to make some distinctions about exploitation in sport. And I think women's athletics in particular and non-major sports for men, cross-country running, track and field, are really good models for what a true student athlete can be and what it means to participate in sports as a part of, like, co-curricular education versus as a sort of commodity. And so I think, you know, I think it's an important conversation. I agree with a lot of the points that you made about exploitation or that have been made. But I also think it's really important to make a distinction. My teammates in college were rowers who are doctors, lawyers, high-level Navy members, and who participated in sport, and many of them also at the national and international level. I myself participated in the Olympics. So I was able to do school, compete hard, excel at my sport, and we were supported in doing that. So I think there is a model for what this could look like, but we're not men's basketball, men's football, or, you know, maybe women's basketball, but I think you'll see even in women's basketball that graduation rates and GPAs are significantly higher than they are in those men's sports.
Sure. Jenny, let me ask you this. Our connection is really poor, but how hard was it for you to balance your level of your sport with your college classwork? I understand it's really, really hard.
It is really, really hard, and it's about making commitments. And, you know, I remember someone saying to me, there are three things you can do in college. You can do extracurricular activities, you can play a sport, you can do school, and you can have a really active social life. And you're probably going to need to pick two out of the three. And I married a rower who rowed on the Canadian national team and who rowed in my college. The people I hung out with were other rowers, so we followed a similar schedule. We definitely had fun, but we weren't out going to concerts and, you know, binge drinking or doing a lot of the things. We weren't necessarily, there were some people in the Greek system, but we focused mostly on school and sports.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. We're going to move on to Jack, who's calling from Elliott. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to echo some of the comments made by the speakers earlier, and also I think it was Jenny who just was on. But the main point is that as human beings, whenever we put one group of human beings over another group of human beings, whether it's the NCAA, whether it's the Catholic Church, with impunity, with no review, abuse shall happen. It's not a maybe. And this is the model we have right now with big-time college sports, and the abuse will happen, and it has to happen because it's in our DNA. And it's something we always have to be on guard for. And this could be the Boy Scouts of America. You know, they get around with a 2D program. But the it's really, really important to understand that and then to have someone advocating for the athletes in this situation. And I also echo, I was grist for the mill for the college football program. I left that and played lacrosse and had a ball. And so very similar to the rower. It was terrific, and we had a broad cross-section of the university playing. It was all for fun, and it was great to establish those relationships with other schools, which is the D3 program.
Well, Jack, thanks so much for calling in.
I think the one thing that separates, like, crew is such a pure, terrific sport, and it what it doesn't have is the kind of money. Mm-hmm. That corrupts in basketball and football, and that's the difference. It's those sports that bring in enormous revenues, TV contracts, and all the attention, and fill up 100,000 seat stadiums, and that's where the problems lie. When there's just so much money to be made, and in you know all of the other sports, I think many studies have shown that athletes. College students who participate in athletics perform better academically than non-athletes, mm-hmm. Because there's that discipline and because you know they need to be efficient with their time and that's the other danger with concussions and the danger of concussions and if you're worried about concussions and you don't want your kids to participate in sports, well, I think that's a real danger too because complacency and obesity. And being inactive, I think, in the long term, is much more detrimental to health than the risk of concussion.
Might depend on which sport your kid wants to play there. But I hear you. I mean, certainly we need to not vilify sports, right? We need to shine a light on the things that are a problem. But, you know, D3 athletics, not a problem. Non-revenue sports, not a problem. Where we see these problems happening is, in fact, where the money is. And it's that corrupting influence. Money really does corrupt everything.
Jack, thanks so much for your call. We have a tweet from Matt. What about the professional sports scene in Maine? The Red Claws, Sea Dogs, Mammoths, and Mariners all have pretty great fan bases. Glenn?
Yes. Minor league sports are thriving in Maine. We haven't had professional hockey for two winters now, but the Maine Mariners are coming back in a different form in October, the ECHL. Which is a sort of the second tier of pro hockey beneath the NHL and the American Hockey League. There's actually a Bruins Flyers alumni game coming up later this month at the Cross Insurance Center. What is that? What we call the Civic Center now? Whatever we call the Civic Center now, Cross
Something
Insurance
like
Arena. The Red Claws are the Boston Celtics G League affiliate. Used to be it's the NBA Developmental League. And they have won their division title 3 years in a row. This year, they're not doing quite as well. They're 16-19, I think. They've got 15 games left in the regular season. It's very good basketball. The Portland Expo is a great spot for them. The Sea Dogs, of course, are always entertaining. They've got a lot of prospects coming through on their way to Fenway, and. We got a fourth sport. What is it?
Somebody said
the Maine Mammoths.
Mammoths.
That's right.
What
indoor
are the Mammoths?
Football, which is going to be interesting. They're actually going to try this at the Civic Center. I think they have 7 or 8 home games. They start in April. The league is only a year old. National Arena League, it's called. It's one of several indoor football leagues. I don't know how many will survive. I don't know if this one will survive. But they're going to give it a shot, and we'll see how they do.
William on Facebook writes, is there a way to watch the sports I want to watch on demand, perhaps? NBC usually plays the sports Americans do best at, not the sports I want to watch. Summer Olympics in particular, because there are so many sports. I have a feeling that no one has the real answer to this question, but what do you think, Karen? How are you going to watch the Olympics?
Yeah, no, there totally is a way to watch online. So NBC, they require that you log in, or at least this is how they've done it in past Olympics. They require that you log in with, like, your cable credentials to sort of prove that you're a customer. So if you're not a cable subscriber, it might be tough. But they put a lot of sports up online, live streaming. And it's really a fun place to watch, because instead of doing that, we're only going to focus on the Americans and only if they win. They really do cover every sport, every athlete, and some of these feeds aren't even there's no announcer there. Sometimes you're just like literally watching the event, and because they don't have an announcer on site, if an American wins, they're planning to just add it in later. So you get to watch sometimes your favorite sport without the person droning on and on, which is kind of fun.
And not all the couple interruptions either,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is quite a feat for NBC to cover the Olympics as it is. I used to work at an NBC station and got a glimpse of some of the planning that goes into it. It's astonishing, covering all those sports all at the same time. It's really an army of people. It is the end of the hour, you guys. This was really fun.
We made it.
but we haven't even covered checkers yet.
I'm sorry, Glenn.
That's okay.
Next time.
All right.
That was Glenn Jordan, sports reporter, sports writer for the Portland Press Herald, and Karen Given, senior producer of NPR's Only a Game. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at MaineCalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Super Thursday, we're going to do a special program, some of our favorite shows of the past few months. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.